Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Jonathan Evason, and he is out with a brand new book. This one is a novel. It's called Small World. The book is available everywhere. Jonathan, where to even start with this incredibly, incredibly entertaining and rolling novel of several different things of time and place? It takes place over the course of about 150 years. It's a huge project, and the book was just, I can't say enough good things about it, but I want to jump into it. You take stories of several people, kind of intertwine them, and display them, report them to us as little vignettes throughout these different chapters. What were you hoping to accomplish by this story? Because I think whatever you were trying to do, you accomplished it.
Well, you know, when we talk about the American experiment, you know, there's this language about melting pot and all these things together, all these different disparate elements that make up, you know, our nation or our national identity. And I've always sort of viewed it like a tapestry with all these different threads. And it's kind of a continuing theme with me, really, as characters connect. I like to write in you know, multiple limited points of view and sort of bring the characters together, because as a reader, I always like this sense of convergence. And I really think that it, for me, it sort of characterizes what our national identity was intended to be anyway. We're all these disparate threads, people from all over, and how we connect and how it forms the larger picture. So I just kind of approached it like a puzzle, sort of. I thought I'd start off, I knew I had to make each character compelling and each vignette kind of sort of compelling to stand on its own well enough that the reader would be, engaged. But then like each, you know, with each cycle, just sort of open it up and more and give the reader that that sensation of starting to see this bigger picture come together, which I always find satisfying as a reader. So, I mean, a lot of the trick for me with this book was to really, really remember what information I'm giving the reader at all times, you know, to help them, to sort of lead them in this dance,
Well, really, a lot of it made me think back to my own family's travels to the United States from a couple generations ago. And so, really, all these stories start about how the people got here and then how they responded to what was going on in America with essentially westward expansion, the railroads. It goes from Chicago, New York, Chicago, California, all the way into the Pacific Northwest. But when you sit down to put it together, the stories, they jump around in time, but it made a logical sense to me. But I think that there was probably a trick to doing that. That had to be an editor's dream to try to puzzle this thing together, right?
Yeah, well, or his nightmare. To me, I always had a visually, we talk about manifest destiny and westward expansion, so it always sort of made sense. Besides the California elements are there from the beginning, but everything else moves westwards towards California to converge, that's where the Transcontinental Railroad became really, instrumental. You know, as the railroad develops, so too does my cast of characters sort of move across country west.
The book opens with a retirement by one of the characters from the railroad after spending 30 years on the railroad, and I don't think a lot of us have an appreciation for it if we didn't have a family member that was working on the railroad. How special was the railroad to families, especially these generational people that several generations had worked on the railroad? Because I think it's something that's lost on a lot of people.
Well, you know, I think nobody's really casual about the railroad. Like, either you're a real enthusiast, it seems like. People that are into the railroad are really into the railroad. But that's what I've observed. I will say that train engineers were kind of a hard people to track down. I don't know if it's because their lives are busy. It's interesting because, I must have, interviewed 20 different people that were engineers or worked on the railroad in some capacity, and wasn't really compared to, say, dentists. Like, I just wrote a screenplay about dentists, and it was so easy to get dentists to talk to me. Oh, let me tell you about dentistry. But it was interesting. I don't know. I think maybe they just have insane schedules. I think that a lot of them work like 15 days on and, a week off or something.
do you think there's an element of the military veterans to it, where a lot of military veterans don't like to talk about their time in war? Is it the same thing with railroads?
I don't know. Maybe. I would hope that being on the railroad isn't as traumatizing as being a soldier. I've had that experience with research, too, where I talked with a number of, Iraq combat veterans from my last book. But, I don't know what it was. I don't know. They were, maybe they just didn't trust a lay person or something. But, my one friend was an old punk rock friend named Christina King, who I'd known since the 80s, kind of more casually, but we'd seen a lot of punk shows together in the 80s, and she was incredibly helpful. In fact, she was the one that would hook me up with some of the old-timers that wouldn't answer me on their own. So, yeah, I acknowledged her in the back of the book. She was super helpful. When I write outside of my experience like that on anything, it's so important to have somebody with expertise to vet it, you know? Because that's, I'm constantly writing outside the purview of my personal experience. And you can't hit any false notes. As a reader, when the author hits a false note, you can lose them. So I'm just really grateful to have had, just with this book, so many people to, so many human resources to help me get it right.
One of the chapters that absolutely moved me emotionally involved twins, brothers and sister, and they were in an orphanage in Chicago. And it was an absolutely gut-wrenching chapter to read. I want to know how gut-wrenching it was to write something like that, because there's a lot of sadness there.
I have a thing with twins. I've known, I've known in my lifetime 11 sets of identical twins, which is just, seems to me like a really large number. Most people know a couple, but I have a real fascination with the relationship between twins, and a real sense of the closeness, the bond there, which is a really, really, really unique bond. I mean, there's an otherness with twins that are like, it's really hard to explain. I mean, you can just imagine what it'd be like to be made out of those same exact materials, basically, and just to be able to finish each other's sentences and that kind of closeness, and especially imagining having been born under the circumstances Finn and Nora were, and losing your father and losing your mother, and the sort of dependency they had on each other. So yeah, I mean, it's heartbreaking to imagine.
I'm chatting with Jonathan Evason about his brand new novel, Small World. The book's available everywhere, and you're going to not be able to avoid it because it's going to be a huge hit this year. Jonathan, I love, as I would read these, the stories, they jump around but still make logical sense. Did you write all the stories in a chronological manner and then break them up, or how did that process go for you?
Pretty organically, actually. There was about six characters that didn't make the cut. There's probably an extra 150, 200 pages on the book that were, there's nothing wrong with the characters themselves. In fact, they were some of my favorites, but it was of primary importance that everything meshed together and bring together. So I ran into, continuity problems with getting people on the plane, the modern train and stuff like that. And when I couldn't get that to work, it was like you just had to cut bait. But in terms of like how they unfold, I did a little shuffling around, but not time-wise. Like chronologically, I'd go back and forth because it was really important to me. There's a lot of subtle little things that happen while you're working, little connections that you can make, some of them even unconsciously. And I feel like if I had written all the 1850s material separately from all the modern material, I would have missed a lot of opportunities. So I did go back and forth, like, pretty much every other chapter from era to era. That way, just, like, workflow-wise, I developed the facility to just jump smoothly back, as I would want the reader to feel like they're moving smoothly.
I've read your books over the years, and as I've read them, I get a sense you really enjoy it. And I mean, any writer has to enjoy what he's doing. But you've had jobs before you became a full-time writer, and we've all had jobs that that some days are worse than others. Do you have that experience as a writer, where sometimes this is a job more than a love or a vocation that you love every day? Do you have bad days as a writer?
Yeah, right now. I'm joking. I set my alarm for 5:45 p.m. I thought I'd give myself a half hour, have a cup of coffee, and then Kristen woke me up, and I'm like, oh, God, I must have set it for 5:45 p.m. As far as the writing goes, there's days where it's kind of a slog, but listen, you know, I've sorted rotten tomatoes for the United Grocers. I've worked in phone rooms. I've worked pretty much every labor job you can imagine. And you know, when I hear writers talk about how hard it is, I'm like, well, you've never cleaned a septic tank, because you know what? I feel lucky to be doing this. It's hard, sure, like any job. I mean, it's frustrating. But you know what? I'm usually warm. It's not raining. You know, I'm in my office, you know. So, no, I pretty much always love it. I mean, I trust and believe in the process itself. I mean, I'm somebody who's thrown away 7 novels. The work is never wasted. I'm not daunted by getting 30,000 words into a project and realizing I have to start over because it's not right. Because I know that the work I've done in that 30,000 words is going to inform it and make it better. And so, like, I think I have a pretty healthy attitude about it. I love the work because I need the work, because otherwise I'm kind of insane, you know. The work really grounds me.
But is there a certain element of fear that comes with it as well? Because, you know, you clean a septic tank, you can tell when it's clean. If you pick tomatoes, you can tell when they're picked. With a novel, you put a lot of stuff in it. Not only do you, I mean, you got to think it's good, but readers have to think it's good too, and an editor has to think it's good. So what type of pressure does that put on you?
There's none. I don't know. I love doing it so much. I do know, you know what I mean? You do know when you finally got it. I mean, there's times where you're sort of deluding yourself it's there and out of necessity, because you got to keep putting words on the page until you get there. But, like, you know, when you finish it, you know when you've hit the right note. I mean, it just as much as, you know, when the septic tank's clean, you know you finally got it. There's little things. I mean, you could tinker with little things forever, but...
You went through in the last.
Yeah,
year.
I wish I could tell you it was harder or more miserable, but I love it, and I seek the challenges out, you know, so I don't get intimidated by it. I just roll up my sleeves, and like the bigger the challenge, the better.
In the last year, you went through something that I don't think a lot of writers have experienced. You went through a political thing with one of your books, where a couple of communities wanted a book that you had written out of a school library, which to me was just a fascinating thing to have and happen in 2021, that had to come out of left field for you. But how did that affect you emotionally when you first heard about it? I mean, there had to be a visceral reaction to it.
You know, it wasn't about my book for me. It was immediately about my family, because I was receiving, you know, threats and trolling and even some cyber attacking. And so, like, I never even reached the point where I was like, hey, my book isn't that bad. And you get, you know, I mean, honestly, for me, just as a father, this is about, okay, boom, let's shut this down, create a distance. We're going to tone down the social networks for a while and just, you know, let this thing pass. But I never really, I mean, I guess I kind of saw it for what it was, which was just like a political straw man. So it never really even personally related to my book. It just seemed sort of arbitrary and random. And at the end of the day, I felt just sort of lucky because, you know, kind of cool to be banned. You know, you're doing something right.
Is there a protocol for that among authors? That, hey, what the hell do you happen? What do you do when this happens?
No, I don't know what the protocol is. I mean, I think some authors would probably want to just jump on it as a opportunity for publicity, and some people would probably want to just, you know, turtle up and avoid the whole thing. I just kind of took it as it came, you know. I mean, I took the opportunity to write some, you know, make public statements and send them out rather than doing a million interviews. And I didn't answer any trolls or anything like that. Just kind of didn't engage and just sort of let it play its life cycle out and sell a bunch of books. But, I just tried to take it in stride. I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of one of those things that it's like, you know, I think I ended up getting really the outpouring of support was greater than the bad stuff, you know. So many librarians and educators and students reaching out and saying, I love your book, you know, this is ridiculous, this is happening. Once the threats and things like that stopped, it wasn't a big deal. I just want to make sure, you know, everything was good with my family.
All right, well, this book was just incredible. It moved me emotionally in several ways. The book is called Small World. It's a new novel by Jonathan Evason. The book's available everywhere. You will not be disappointed with this one. Jonathan, a fantastic novel, and thanks for joining me to talk about it.
Oh, thank you so much, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.